In 2018, after nearly 40 years in broadcasting, I retired as Assistant Director of Engineering at NPR's WNYC WQXR Radio in New York City. One morning in the 1990s, while sitting in my office on the 25th floor of the municipal building, I felt my eyes begin to well up and my lower lip start to quiver. I was suddenly overcome by a sadness so consuming that I had to stop, take a breath, and gather myself. When I finally settled down, I noticed that our FM station was playing a familiar piece of music. I recognized the melody, but I couldn't place it. It was a solemn, slow-flowing piece with violins and cellos moving from dissonance to bright, open resolves, then finally ending on what I thought sounded like a musical amen. It was a very moving piece, and I wondered, for reasons not yet apparent, if it's what triggered my reaction. I walked down to the studio where Steve Post was hosting his morning program. In the 1960s, Steve was a pioneer in freeform radio at WBAI-FM in New York. Then, early in the 1980s, he began his 20-year career here at WNYC around the same time I did. He became legendary, not only for raising millions of dollars for public radio, but also for his ability to tick people off with his wonderfully wry style of humor. He was also a great guy who I had the privilege of calling friend. After entering the studio and explaining what had happened, I asked Steve what music he'd just played. I was somewhat surprised that he didn't answer right away. Instead, he looked at me curiously and asked, "When were you born?" I paused, and I said, "April 26th, 1960. He nodded and he told me that the music was Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. It was played during President Kennedy's funeral procession following his assassination in November of 1963. Since I was less than 4 years old at the time, Steve was surprised that I even had any recollection of the event at all, let alone remembering the music. I explained that there were certain things I did remember, vividly. Even the rainy Friday that followed the assassination and recollections of the turbulent aftermath. I remembered Oswald's haunting gasp when he was shot during the live coverage of his transfer from the Dallas City Jail. I remember the tolling of church bells in my Brooklyn neighborhood as my family and I walked to gather at my grandmother's house. There, I remember the grown-ups, my mother, my aunts, my cousins, all of them crying, although I didn't understand why. I remember stepping into the bathroom, wetting my finger in the sink, then standing in front of the mirror as I painted tears down my cheeks. Maybe I didn't understand the sorrow, but somehow I just knew that I should be crying too. Those memories had always been the most unsettling ones of all to me. That is, up until that morning in the office. Science says that the ability to store and recall sound starts before birth. However, it's unlikely that a 3.5-year-old kid could have held on to such detailed autobiographical memory. Not in a way that lasted in my situation. The science also tells us that a true sense of self, awareness of our place in the world, doesn't develop until later in childhood. But that night, after work, after climbing the steps to J&R Music on Park Row to buy a copy of Barber's Adagio for Strings, I went back home to Brooklyn and listened. And in spite of everything that science says, I wept anyway.